April 18th, 2024. And Mr. Gerber, I will ask you to call the roll for the Board of Commissioners meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, as well as the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board meeting.
Commissioner Bailey? Commissioner Bailey, give me a thumbs up if you are voting present. Great. Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
And Chairman Ritchie?
Present. So it's 12:19, and so we're officially called to order, and we do have a quorum. And we will proceed with Commissioner Apostolo leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, a quorum is present, and I think our first order of business is to acknowledge that three of our board members have been reappointed, Commissioners Apostolo, Vice Chair Bailey, and you, Chairman Ritchie. And so I would ask the three of you all to stand, and we can redo the Nydia, do you want to? They've already signed?
Yes, they've already signed.
Well, you can stand and affirm in a public setting that. Just simply state your name. I state your name.
I, Carl Ritchie.
Doug Bailey.
Great. Repeat after me. Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I have not directly or indirectly paid.
That I have not directly or indirectly paid.
Offered, promised to pay.
Offered or promised to pay.
Contributed.
Contributed.
Or promised to contribute.
Or promised to contribute.
Any money or thing of value.
Any money or thing of value.
Or promised any public office or employment.
Or promised any public office or employment.
As a reward to secure my appointment.
As a reward to secure my appointment.
Or confirmation thereof.
Or confirmation thereof.
And that I will faithfully execute.
And that I will faithfully execute.
The duties of the Office of Commissioner of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
The duties of the
Office of the Commissioner of the Housing
Authority of the City of Austin.
That. And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
The state of Texas.
The state of Texas.
And this city.
And this city.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We've received affidavits from each of you, and so the board eligibility requirements have been met. There are a couple of wrinkles that come with new board reappointment, and so we'll work through those with our colleagues over at the city, and I will turn those over to our able notary, Ms. Irams. Congratulations. Next item up, Mr. Chair, is public comment. There is one person wishing to comment, Lacey Lugo from the apartment concierge, who is joining us by video. And Ms. Lugo, you've got 3 minutes to address the board. Are you able to hear us?
Barely. I'm not sure if you could turn the volume up a little bit on your side.
Yep, volume's up on our side. Go ahead and get started.
Okay, I'll go ahead and just kind of jump in if that's okay.
Please.
So my name's Lacey Lugo. I'm the CEO of the Apartments Concierge. It is a premier white glove leasing service for the apartment industry here in Texas. We service the major markets of Houston, Dallas, Austin, and San Antonio. We are a voucher placement service. So what we do is we actually take the housing choice voucher, and through our strategic partnerships with our landlords that we represent, we actually help place these voucher holders directly with our landlord partners. So we are a third-party leasing service. Pretty much in a nutshell, what we do is we take the voucher holder and we partner it with a landlord who wouldn't necessarily be seeking voucher holders for their asset. So I wanted to go ahead and just kind of make our services known to the Austin market. I did have, we're based here out of Houston. I did have the privilege of meeting with one of the heads of the landlord liaison departments last week when I was in Austin. And so I just wanted to go ahead and introduce myself to the committee and just let them know that we will be working diligently with our new communities that we brought in the Austin market. I think we just signed another 30,000 units. So I just wanted to go ahead and introduce myself and let you guys know that we are here to help you place as many voucher holders in high opportunity zones as possible.
Thank you. We appreciate that very much. Lisa Garcia heads up our rental assistance programs, including all of our voucher programs, and we'll give you her number, give her your number, and she will call you before the week is out and get on each other's radar screens. The landlord outreach specialist that you met with reports to Lisa, so we'll just make that additional connection. Sound good?
Yeah, I look forward to meeting with you, and I appreciate you providing those services. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the public wishing to make a comment?
Yeah, I got a question. Well, first of all, how come I can't see anybody else? You know, I just worry about my fellow commissioners doing something that they know I don't like. But have we ever used this type of service before?
Lisa, have we...
We have, we right do now. Have some,
Lisa, have we ever used this kind of stuff before?
Not this specific service, but we do have some apartment yeah. locators that have, they do help, families locate homes. So we do connect people with apartment locators.
And when they, are working this service, do they take into account the special folks that we've set aside, like the veterans and the homeless and the whatever else?
Yeah, we make sure that we would provide the information to anyone that has a voucher that's looking for a place, but we can definitely connect them with veterans and others that are looking with the special purpose vouchers.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah, Commissioner, I would just add that I think Ms. Lugo's service would meet with the resident and do some kind of an assessment of where they want to live, what kind of options are available, what might best meet the needs of their family if they have kids or if there's a job, you know, getting them somewhere in an area where they want to be and where that family can feel that they can be successful. Yeah, the challenge, of course, is not all. There's no requirement for a landlord to take the vouchers. So, yeah, many of these services, you know, are aware of those landlords that do take the voucher, and they can be helpful, and they complement our own landlord outreach program here that we have. We have a couple of folks who do that work, and so I'm glad that Lacey had the chance to meet with one of them last week. We'll get her and Lisa together and deepen the relationship.
Let me just say this, Lacey, this is Carl Ritchie. I'm chair of the board, and thanks for your outreach. One of the things that we always are looking for is new partners, especially someone who will help us with housing choice voucher tenants.
Once again, is there anyone from the public wishing to address the board? If not, we'll go ahead and close public comment, and we'll turn to Lupe Garcia and the Citywide Advisory Board. Come on up. I hope I'm not breaking a trust, but Lupe's family has been going through quite a bit, and we're all rooting for you and your kids and grandkids. There's a bit of recovery, and we're just thinking about you all.
Good morning. Thank you. Minutes for April the 9th, 2024. I, Lupe Garcia, call the meeting to order at 10:32. Veronica Castillo Perez, Citywide Board Vice President, read the minutes from March 12th, Citywide Board meeting. Alice Madrid, President of Gaston, motion to accept the March minutes. Steve Richard, President of Rosewood, second the motion. Alice Madrid, Citywide Board Treasurer, provided the treasurer's report. The balance is $2,892. Presentations, Michael Roth, Vice President of APAMI, stated importance of fire safety and rental insurance. We had one unit on fire management, occupancy reviews at Lakeside, Goodrich, and Salinas. Spire inspections also schedule at Chalmers East and North Loop. Austin Pathways updates, Liliana Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development. Congratulations to Richard Salazar, resident of Lakeside, for being honored at the 80 and over Family Elder Care Awards. Congratulations to Devon Sterling, resident of Santa Rita, for being awarded the Texas Narrow Scholarship. There will be a HUD election and resident council in-person training on June 13th at the HACA headquarters. Abby Biddy, Youth Education Success, received 34 applications this year for the HACA Austin Pathway Scholarships, which was an increase from 23 applications last year. We have completed the evaluation of the Comprehensive Youth Development Program and finalized the negotiating terms. March 21st was the celebration of the Boys and celebration of the Boys and Girls Club grand opening at Chalmers West, and we have 64 residents enrolled in the FSS PBR program, and 14 are earning an escrow. Murphy Rowland Work Development Literacy Coalition started providing GED classes at Chalmers South. There's a stipend up to $500 for residents who complete their GED. IDAD's graduation is tonight. We have two teens, dads, who recently joined. Bromley Bringing Home Health. Diabetes education at Lakeside beginning on May 1st. Daniel Reese Home Ownership Youth Financial Journey classes starts May 7th. Two HACA families are in the home ownership lending phase. Property updates. Alupe Garcia shared information about the Women's Conference and IMOM's graduation. On May 31st, there are 20 new IMOMs graduating. Veronica Castillo Perez, thank Veronica Riggins for setting up the citywide board meeting online at the Chalmers East and invited residents to the meeting. Alice Madrid hosting an Easter bingo on March 27th at Gaston. The meeting was adjourned. Steve Richard, President of Rosewood, motion to adjourn the meeting. Veronica Castillo Perez, President of Chalmers, second the motion, and the meeting was adjourned at 11:32. Any questions? No? Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
What does it take for an IMOM to be eligible for graduation?
She has to attend 6 months in the program. She has to have volunteer hours. She's had to take certain classes, which is one is coming up in May, which is family engagement with PBS. What I do is calculate all the hours they do is for volunteer, where they're at, if they got a job, and training, and a lot of attendances. The attendance is very important so that they don't miss any information that's given out. And though we only meet once a month, I contact all the IMOMs twice a month before the next meeting to see where they're at and if there's anything that they need, and they usually will contact me to see if there's any more classes coming up that they need to take. So we have 3 graduates coming from ACC, and those are IMOMs that have attended ACC that are gonna graduate from there this year, and 3 that are buying homes.
That's it. And Lupe, the Women's Conference this year is gonna be on
May 31st,
and it'll come 2 weeks after the
Mayfest,
which is on May 17th.
Exactly.
So we're excited about both events, although they're coming close together, but that's okay because they're doing different things. I hope commissioners will come and staff will come to both events. But the Women's Conference last year was one of the most moving things that I got to be a part of, seeing this group of women graduate. I mean, there were 40 women, and it was a plus, and it was it was very moving, and a lot of just inspiring stories. So hats off for that. Obviously, Mayfest will have a little different focus, talking about services for seniors, you know, in a more general context, but we're hoping to get big attendance out to both, because they're both very important and worthwhile things, and thanks for your leadership on helping out in both.
I did try to do it later, like I told Mike, but everything was taken, and that was the only day I had was May 31st. but the reason I do it during the school year is because that way the imoms can attend and they don't have to worry about paying a babysitter for their kids or who's going to pick them up or feed them. And so that was that's the reason I do the imoms during the school, when school's on. So maybe next year I might choose for March or September, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is that good?
Thank you. We're excited about both events. March, I think, would be wonderful because I think there's a lot of excitement around the spring, and we can. But both would be great.
Yeah, I just have to start working in September for March.
That's true too.
Either way, but anyway, but I hope to see everybody there. I would love to see y'all there this year. It's going to be very special, and we have so many, many, many surprises coming up. Yes, ma'am.
Can you mention some of the speakers or people that are going to be there?
Councilman Jose Velasquez, Mayor Kirk Watson, Zuleika Morales from HUD, Katharina from CEO from California, Southwest Keys, Melissa Ortiz from Capital Metro. Special guest will be State Representative Lulo Flores and Ofelia Zapata.
It's a star-studded lineup. That's great.
And of course, you'll be the main speaker. It's in the paper already.
Thanks for letting me know.
That was the last part. Right. Thank you, y'all.
Yes, I will definitely.
That's
definitely
how you do it. And then you just walk away. Bye, y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, Lupe. Okay, now we get to kind of one of my favorite things of the year, recognition of the Texanaro Award winners. This is a great year for HACA, and congratulations to all those who won. Let me start with in communications. You know, this year we've really lifted our communications up, and we're excited that that was recognized by Texanaro. This year we received the award for Best Annual Report, also the award for Best Newsletter, and the Best... Those are the two, and other publications. And what was it? It was the resident calendar. Yep. So, and we received three communications awards, and Damien has been leading the charge in our communication shop and doing much of that solo. And so, hats off to him for his leadership, and we really appreciate all you've been doing. Michael Roth, come on down. There's two folks who have. Won awards in Michael's shop, and so let Michael introduce them, both of these team members, to you.
Yes, good afternoon, commissioners. I'm very excited to talk about both of these staff members. First person who was the recipient of the Administrative Person of the Year for Texanaro. She started working with us in October of 2020, which we all remember exactly what that time was. And every administrative person has a lot of work, a lot of tasks, coordinating meetings, mailings, working with a bunch of people, but doing that from a remote and starting from remote and coordinating all that is tremendous in and of itself. But truly what makes this person unique and deserving of the award right now is the fact that everything that she does with a sincere desire to get it right and to really provide service to the people she's working with and for. And her friendliness, her kindness is absolutely genuine. And so it's very deserving that Amy Duham would be recognized as the Texanaro Administrative Person of the Year. Yes. So.
We'll do
it at the end. So I'm very excited to share about with another member of our team from PAMI for the Maintenance Person of the Year. And Jay has been working with us as District Lead Maintenance for 2 years. Before that, he served. Before that, he served as working as maintenance at Gaston and also here in the central office. And we could point to numerous incredible inspection scores, countless work orders, many, many, many make readies, whether it's TDHCA, HUD, lenders, they get the work done. But again, what makes Jay unique and deserving of the award is his genuine commitment to making sure, to the mission, that residents have a great place to live and a safe place to live, and his commitment to the staff that they have the resources and the safety and the opportunities to be able to do their job well. And so Jay is very deserving, and we're very honored that Jay Jenkins is the Texas NARO Maintenance Person of the Year.
Director of Procurement and Operations. Tina, we started working together in 1997 when we were doing everything manually. So she has been very instrumental through the years. We endured several procurement softwares, setting SOPs. We went from paper to paperless. I can honestly tell you that Tina and I have been in every unit in our low-income portfolio when we implemented the asset system. So she's my secret weapon. She is awesome. We're a service provider mainly for low-income housing. So we all work very closely together. I don't have to worry about when I'm not here, because she'll handle any problem at any. Every problem becomes an opportunity to get things done, and always at the right time, at the right price, and when everybody needs it. So I'm very proud that she was nominated and she won. I just wish she was here, because she is an awesome part of my team, and everybody loves her. And I just wish she was here so she could present her to you, and so you would know her, that she's just an awesome person that serves our department and this agency. So
she's a very neat person, and a very able, skilled professional. And
oh, she is.
She and Sylvia Blanco were roommates back at the University of Texas back in the day when they were in college.
My first roommate at UT.
Yep. So.
Don't ask her any questions.
She's not a morning person, but she gets things done. She's my secret weapon.
We're delighted and excited. And yes. Nora has followed her work with her for many years. And, she's got some skills that are going to be very, very important to our success.
Yep.
And so
she is.
I need to pass on
the I will.
All right. Thanks. Also want to make the board aware that Zuleika Morales Romero from HUD, who's been such a supporter of ours for so many years and is going to come to the Blue Base Conference, she was selected as Community Partner of the Year. We put her forward, and the Deputy Administrator for Regional Administrator for us came to the luncheon, but in recognition of her service. But she's been heading up that San Antonio field office for a number of years. And the thing that we highlighted about Zuleika was that, you know, she's not there just in the good, but we've had some tough stuff. She even came to a meeting when things didn't go so well with Santa Rita as we were trying to work on the financing of Santa Rita. And she said she was going to be in town. Could she come by and visit? You know, usually we're pretty spit shine. And we said, hey, we don't really have an event per se. We're just doing hard work. And so, okay, I just want you all to, is that okay? And we had done something similar before. But she came and she got to hear some of the hard stuff too. And she's given us good ideas and has been creative in working with us moving forward. And yeah, it's rare that you have that kind of a partner with HUD. And so we're grateful to have her, and we're grateful that that was acknowledged through Texas NARO. Last but not least,
so pleased that Commissioner Apostolo was selected as Tech Tomorrow Commissioner of the Year.
So, Lisa, there are about 200 at the conference? 151, but there are a lot of other people coming and going, speakers and stuff, yeah. So, commissioners, we'll now turn to the consent agenda.
I got one comment I want to make. When we were in Washington and at the NARO conference, we had a chance to meet a number of folks from El Paso, and they applauded us, but also bemoaned that we took Jorge from him. And so we all know how valuable he is, but it was just sort of reassuring how much they cared for him in El Paso and how someone may come here to follow him.
Regarding resolution 02841, the approval to renew our in-school case management and property-based tutoring services, which is of course led by communities and schools. And we're so pleased that Sharon V. Hill. Sharon, why don't you and your team come on forward? Come on up. Just grab any empty seat. Sharon V. Hill's the relatively newish CEO of communities and schools.
I'm a toddler.
And 18 months. Jackie Platt, Maria Flores, and where's Amit? Come on up. I think folks know Amit from his days on the Community Development Commission and has done a number of things in our community and is now the Chief Operating Officer. But Sharon, why don't you introduce your team, and I'll turn it over to Leilani, and you and Abby can
Yes, we do have a PowerPoint presentation here. Good afternoon.
HACA Board of Commissioners, staff, and distinguished guests. My name is Leilani Limvillegas, and I serve as the Senior Director of Community Development. And with me is Abigail Bettini. She's our new hire replacing Barbara Jackson, who is now the new Youth Educational Success Manager. And I want to turn it over to her, and after her slide, then I will invite Sharon Vahil and her team to come up here to provide the presentation for communities and schools regarding Resolution 02841. It is officially called the In-School Case Management and Property-Based Tutoring Services, and we've had this partnership with community schools for several years now. So I'm going to click the slide and have it. Oh, Keith, I'm trying to kick the, do you want to, maybe you can do it on that side.
Can you hit it one more time?
Oh, I want to hear it. Hit it one more time. I want to hear what's this. There.
All right, good afternoon. I'm just going to provide a little bit of an overview of the relationship and our experience previously with communities and schools. So HACA has contracted with communities and schools since 2001, which is a very impressive 23 years. They provide services to HACA residents at 9 local schools and on 4 HACA properties. In May of 2018, Communities and Schools was designated as a sole source provider by HUD based on the uniqueness of the programming they're able to provide our residents. This contract amount is for $600,000 over the course of the year, and previous resolution 02611 allowed the option for the contract to be extended for up to 5 years with HACA board updates every year. If you're interested in the schools where services are provided and the HACA properties where our services are provided, you can see that list on the right side of our slide up there.
Oh, okay. Let me get closer. Muy buenas tardes. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sharon Vigil, and I am the proud CEO of Communities and Schools. And next to me is my colleague Jackie, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Jackie Platt, and I'm a Senior Program Director for Campus-Based Services at Communities and Schools, and I'm directly supporting our team of program managers and Smart Kids coordinators who are implementing this program that we have contracted with you.
So Jackie's the real deal. If I can't answer a question, I'm gonna toss it to her. So let's go ahead and get started. So and just as a reminder that this is a report from last year, and what you'll hear me say is and this year we're currently doing this. I'm gonna give you a twofer. Also do a mid-year check-in as well. So. Last year, we served 307 students. They received our intense case management. So when the team talked to you about a sole source, it's because we implement something called the Integrated Student Supports Model, which is the only research-based model that has been proven to be effective to target disengagement. Additionally, we have been highlighted by TEA, the Texas Education Agency, as one of the best-in-class programs for disengagement and attendance recovery. 111 students attended at least 10 Smart Kids after school programming sessions. I'll tell you that we had a lot that attended 8 and 9, but our contract officially says that we can only count them if they attend 10 times. 94% of all HACA students received school-wide basic needs or crisis support. So what we did this year is we pooled all HACA students. They may not be served by CIS, but you know, in our case management, but they still got access to food. They still got access to clothing. They still got access to crisis support if that's what they needed. And then the last thing that I will share I'm really proud of is one of the feedback sessions. We do a lot of community engagement and listening to our parents. Our parents said, can CIS and Smart Kids, our program, can we do a little bit more of parent check-ins? So we started to do that last year and this year, and thus far we've had 640 teacher check-ins to talk about students' grades, their attendance, and their behavior in the classroom. So now we're adding a different layer of support. So a little bit of the characteristics. So you can't see it on there, but gender, we serve 47% male, 53% female. Race and ethnicity, that dark blue that you see, that is 65% Hispanic and Latino. And so we really are following the trend of our local community and also the trend of our state. And what you're not seeing here per grade level, and we'll make sure to send this to you all, but what you see is that we have pre-K all the way to 12th grade. And what we wanted to show you is a data demographics, a picture of that we're serving students from pre-K all the way to 12th grade. But we are serving the most students in fourth grade with 12% of the students served being in that grade level. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small percentage, less than 5% of those students. But I will get that percent, that number to you, and we'll send it to Leilani. Of the total population. Mm-hmm. That's the number. That's the percentage that I got. I don't have the hard number for you. Okay. So, additionally, what we wanted to share with you is that we've provided over 9,000 hours of service across 5 service areas. So every student gets enrichment activities. That means that we take them on field trips, or we are doing summer programming, and obviously we're doing after-school programming. 35% of our time has been spent with doing mental and behavioral health. So you know that CIS places directly on campus highly qualified, highly trained staff, and so they really are doing mental health check-ins, behavioral health check-ins with students. We then do parent engagement, we do academics and CCMR, which is college and career military readiness support, and then we do health and human services referrals. One thing that I'm really proud of is that HACA students, 27, are receiving 27 hours a year of support on average. That's a 25% more hours than a non-HACA student, which is only 19 hours. And let me tell you why this is important. About 7 years ago, we did a third-party evaluation, and the evaluator showed that a student in CIS who received a minimum of 16 hours, you saw an impact in their academics, behavior, and attendance. I'm proud that we're doing 27 service hours, but I also want to tell you that the reason why we're doing that is because, if you all remember, we also brought a third-party evaluator 3 years ago. And when we were trying to do a comparison study, it was really hard to find a comparison for HACA students. HACA students, on average, have some of the highest needs on campus. So we have to serve them more. We have to provide more layered services. We also provided, yes. Correct. A small portion. There isn't. So we provide a unique case manager that is only supporting HACA students. And so that case, in each of the schools that we mentioned. So one human being that is only contracted through HACA is meeting with students on campus in the CIS room, and then as soon as the bell rings, we head over to their home site and provide after-school programming, and we also start engaging the family, and we start doing home visits. So there is... we've separated and we made it that way.
Numbers,
So the first thing that I will share is that students are selected based on need. And so if a student is considered chronically absent, if a student is having behavioral issues in the classroom, or if the student hasn't passed an exam, an end of the year exam, or if a student is behind in their classwork. And so that traditionally is how we select students. But this is such a special program that if you're a HACA student, you just receive services from CIS. And so, many of our students, HACA students, do have one of those criteria that helps us provide, you know, support to them. We partner with the school. We host and we sometimes lead something called a child study team, where we work with the counselor, we're working with the principal, we're working with teachers, we're working with parent support specialists, and we are studying the entire population of the school, and then we're saying these are the students that CIS should serve. And can it be increased? Currently, we are at capacity. Every single HACA coordinator exceeds their caseload numbers, but if we push any more, the quality of work that we can provide to you starts to diminish. So right now, the only way that we know how to increase is by adding additional staff, and currently the $600,000 does not cover the entire program cost. CIS then fundraises, and we chip in to provide this layered services to HACA. This program is running us close to $1.3 million, and the rest we fundraise.
Now, I'm assuming that a lot of the students that you serve will have some type of difficulty academic difficulty in either reading or math.
Correct. Yeah, so one of the beautiful things about CIS is that we have a volunteer department. And so when we see that a student is not on grade level, they get matched with a mentor, or they get matched with something that is called a reading buddy. And that reading buddy works weekly with that student to provide that support. Additionally, we do reading nights. But this is where the family engagement comes into play. We connect with the family, we're working with them, and we are really helping them understand the importance of reading. And then do you remember the conversations that we are having with teachers? So we're connecting home and school to help the child. But it's through our reading and our reading mentors and our reading buddy supports. Minutes is usually. So if it's a porch visit, that's a little bit shorter. So that might be between 10 and 15 minutes. So we're dropping off something, we are checking in, but when it's a home visit, on average, it's about 45 minutes. It is not, and those 20 service hours actually is excluded from our 450 from our 367 home visits. So 27 hours is of direct mentoring, counseling, case management. Additionally, we have provided 367 home visits. So those 367 times 45 minutes. And if you add that to our 27, it will give you that average number. Yes, that will come soon. It will come, I think, in slide. We can go. Next slide, please. Yes, of course. Correct. Well, we will be entering conversations with our partners. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
we will be having these conversations with our partners, I'll tell you that we do not seek to make a profit. We are a nonprofit, and part of the services that we provide are because we believe that our students are our future, and we should be investing. And based on the information that I gave you about how hard it is to find a comparison group for HACA, we think that that additional investment is money well spent. But thank you for that question, Commissioner.
Yeah, I don't so much.
Yes. Yes.
It's a nonprofit that is charging up for the services they offer, so they operate at a loss, and so therefore they lose quality folks. If you lose quality folks, then that impacts the kids that you're serving.
Yeah, thank you.
I'd much rather pay for quality service than not, because you're, as you say, you're already at capacity. So
yeah. Thank you. Yes.
For expenses, I noticed that in the report you mentioned that for the after-school activities, et cetera, they're using students from UT and from another organization.
We use a SEEK. And the UT Engineering Club.
Now, are these people volunteers, or are you paying them?
We don't. Yeah, those are. So picture this. We then send our coordinators that are full-time paid staff. Then they go to the housing authority site, and we have a room there. And that full-time staff then leverages partners, and they bring them in. And so those volunteers are free. But we have paid. Correct. So not only have they been adequately trained, but we do background checks on them. And then they receive our volunteer training. Thank you for those questions. So I will tell you that we have homework time, and homework time is the first 30 minutes of the agenda, and so they will come in and do that, and then the rest of the agenda is an enrichment activity where we are connecting science with art, and then after that we do a healthy snack, and then after that we do basic needs check-ins, because there we find out, oh, I don't have food at home, or oh, I don't have shoes. And so we have these conversations, and then at the same time, we're able to provide that. I will tell you that our after-school program follows a YPQ, which is Youth Program Quality Standards, and our summer programming follows the American Camp Association standards, which means that we have to have background checks. Yeah, so those are the highest standard. Yeah, so those are the highest standards in out-of-school time programming and the highest standards in summer camp programming.
Commissioners, one of the things that I think we did back maybe 5 years ago, before the pandemic, that was really helpful, was I know we went and visited some of the campuses and actually got to see some of the programs. It's been a while since we've obviously done that.
We'd love to host that.
I think it'd be great to do a specific four commissioners, because this is a really significant investment, and I think when you see it, and then actually can actually see the curriculum, it's helpful.
And that's been my problem all along. I know it would be great work, but I want to be able to visualize what that work entails.
Yeah.
And I read over and over on provide enrichment activities, like what? Or you provide tutoring, and what? So
okay.
I need to have more of the specifics, and you're giving me a better picture now.
Thank you. So we do have, I have, and maybe we can talk offline, but we could do a special campus visit. CIS will provide lunch, and we can do it at one of the, you know, one of our current campuses. We do have a campus visit that is happening this month. I can send it out to you all. It's not one of our, you know, HACA sites,
right,
but it would give you a flavor of what CIS is.
If you don't mind, let's talk mm-hmm. offline and get some proposed dates. I think a targeted one for HACA kids, so that we can not only go through, see the program as it impacts our kids, but I think also, because I think the program makes a tremendous difference, and I think Abby and Leilani would agree, and of course Barbara Jackson was kind of the keeper of the flame for a long time, and we lost her to the wilds of Duluth, Minnesota, but Abby is here stepping into the relationship. Yes. But we've invested a lot, and CIS has invested a lot, and we're really, I think great partners. And I think part of that partnership means, us bringing our commissioners out there to actually see it. So if I can work with you and with Jackie to try to figure out a date that might work well, and spend a few hours to just go through and talk to the and Dr. Duncan Hall has, so
yes,
you're not special. Suki got the same thing. Dr. Duncan Hall brings an incredible background in education policy and curricula and working with kids, and walking through that would I think be very helpful, because
yeah,
things have changed.
Yeah, thank you for your questions.
Sure, and these are great questions.
These are great questions.
And we should make sure.
And one of the things is, we welcome feedback. We welcome questions, because this is our work. It's not mine or yours. It really is ours together. And so I'm so grateful for that. So I'm going to finish the slides really quick, if you're okay with that. They didn't. Can you go back really quick? Darn it. Okay, so 88% of the HACA students improved or maintained their target academic behavior and or attendance. 100% of our students stayed in school. And 92.2% graduated or were promoted to the next grade level, which was higher than AISD. Next. You're not seeing this, but I'm going to point it out here. And if you all will just imagine, it actually is supposed to have labels. So what I wanted to do is give you all a comparison study. As you know, AISD dismantled their research department. And so, but I also want to tell you that they're bringing it back. And so we were just part of the interview process, and we were able to select the top candidate. And so my goal is to give you a comparison group next year. But for now, what I did is I asked our third-party evaluator, let's look at the students. Let's look at a group of students and demographics, and let's see how they're comparing. So what you will see is that in the blue line is English proficient students. And we're comparing HACA students to CIS non-HACA students. That's the closest comparison that I can give you. Remember, I don't have access to AISD. So what you see here is that in the baseline, the English proficient students are doing better than the students who are doing English language arts. And we often hear about something that is called closing the achievement gap. And what that means is that students who are doing less than their counterpart, you close the achievement gap when you get closer or you surpass it. So what we're showing you here is that emergent bilingual students that were HACA students compared to non-HACA students surpassed and closed the achievement gap in English language learners. What you're seeing in the next graph, and you all know that math is hard, that's exactly what happened as well at the higher rate. So our English proficient students started off higher, which we would assume, but our emergent bilingual surpassed by over 1%. And so when we're talking about closing achievement gaps and we're talking about looking at how our work is improving academics, I wanted to give you a subset so that we can have these conversations. I didn't just want to come with output data or outcomes data. I really wanted to talk about achievement gap data to show how our work is really impacting the everyday lives of students. I hope that we can maybe send this to everybody, but especially to Dr. Duncan Hall. I think that she would really appreciate this. The last one, I'm sorry. You all, one of the other things that we provide is a program that is called Compass to College, where we focus specifically on college access. And so I won't belabor this, but I will share with you that we had 19 students and families that applied to the Austin Pathways HACA Resident Scholarship last year. We hosted a lot of financial aid nights. We provided college field trips to students. We start working with families so that they are informed of student choice. And so just wanted to provide that to you all to have. It's okay, bro. It's okay. This is great. This is important. We start career exploration in pre-K with students, but when you're talking at in high school?
Well, in terms of
yeah, so we
have to assume that you don't wait until you're senior.
Correct. We start in ninth grade. Yeah. So right now, you know, and because we've heard some of that feedback, I'll tell you that if you would have asked me last year, I would have said, oh no. But this year, we just are implementing a summer bridge program for eighth grade students who are transitioning to ninth grade. And so our summer bridge program really helps students transition into ninth grade and into high school. And additionally, we're starting to talk about GPAs and credits. And we're starting to visualize and say, what is next after high school? And what are the things that you have to do? And we take them on college and campus, college visits. So, okay. Yes. Parents.
So how do you get them engaged in that
activity? I'll get back to you on that. I am sure we're doing something, but I don't know enough. Jackie, do you want to?
Yeah, I can share a little. I know that we, particularly at the high school level, we have hosted FAFSA nights where we're inviting the full families to come, learn about scholarships, learn about application processes. And a natural part of our kind of program requirements is that we're doing that family engagement. From the very beginning of our services, we're reaching out to families and asking them, what is your vision for your students' future? And so those conversations are starting immediately as we're building relationships with parents. And we continue to check in with them, invite them to events that we're hosting on campus, and keep them updated.
One of the things that I will share is that we now have these conversation guides with families that look very different. And so conversation guides are that our staff will say, did you know that grade level means this? Did you know, so that we're connecting grade level reading to post-secondary success. In fifth grade, we're having conversations with parents about math And we're saying, if you choose a lower math grade, do you know that the likelihood of going to college is this? And so we encourage you to opt in to higher math courses. So we are starting CCMR conversations with parents at the elementary level. Yes, you're right. Significantly.
And that's where we've got to start zoning in into some different kinds of activities.
Yeah, thank you. You know, one of the, thank you. I will, thank you for that.
And another thing that I want to just sort of throw in with this parent participation, when they need to get involved, I really think it does have to start in middle school. When I was at ACC for many, many years, I ran the summer youth program, and it took me 1 year to find out that I had to start a parent academy that would go along with that program. And the kinds of things that the parents need to understand as well as kids are the opportunities available to them now, because when you said, what do you envision for your parents? Many of them did not envision anything, or if they did, it was the traditional, I want them to be a doctor, a nurse, or a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the only areas in which they had some sense of what would be a better life for their child. And when you think about the extraordinary opportunities, career opportunities that we have today, parents don't I really think it's up to us to provide them that opportunity so that their vision increases astronomically, not only for the kids, but for themselves. And that's the kind of ask that I want to talk to you about, how to increase those kinds of activities so that students and parents are motivated. So it's not a question of if my child goes to college, but when my child goes to college. I mean, and we have to get there to that. And I'm not sure if we did.
Yeah.
Because when I looked at the data, and there's only two students who applied for college from one of the programs, I'm saying, this is a tragedy. We're doing all this great work, but we've got to get to a point where the students are going on to college. And now we have this fantastic opportunity to ACC, who will be providing free tuition for all in-district students. We've got to have our people there. We really do. And there are so many opportunities to do this. So how do we mesh that? And one of the things that I discovered that was very successful was taking them to ACC campuses.
Mm-hmm.
Parents as well as the students, so that when they went over to ACC Eastview campus, they saw all the medical programs that are available that many of them didn't even know existed.
Yes.
You know, from EMS to pharmacology to medical assistants, I mean, good paying jobs, but they have to know early enough to let, again, to say, how do I prepare my child for that kind of program?
And if you all would be open to it, I'd love to have myself and Jackie and a member of HACA sit down with Dr. Duncan Hall and just hear a little bit more about some of these suggestions and really build a rapport to, so we can listen to that.
Is it okay if I address that?
There's a lot here and a limited time that we have today. I would suggest that maybe, I've been taking a lot of notes. I know Leilani, you and Abby have as well. I'm sure your team has also. What if we figured out any board members, if we needed to call a special meeting, we could certainly do that. Or if there's a subcommittee of the board who would be interested in joining that discussion. But I would see, you know, some kind of a meeting where we could talk about, where we could actually tour and see the program and see the curriculum. But then, you know, a continuation of that being a discussion about, are we focusing and investing in the in the right things, and do we need to make additional investment to make sure that we're getting what we would hope to achieve for our kids?
I don't know if it's a change in focus, or do we just, like...
I'm behind you.
Oh. I knew you were there at some point. We may just need to put more money into the program to make sure that this component has the bite that it needs.
I've got one question. It goes back. You said something about fourth grade. I guess this, where the intervention begins. Is that correct? Was something about fourth grade?
Oh, the highest percentage of students that we serve are in fourth grade. Pre-K.
Okay.
We serve HACA students from pre-K to 12th grade.
And the thing that strikes me is that, Dr. Hall can chime in on this, but the state of Texas makes this decision on how many jail cells to build based on third grade. And so I'm just wondering if there's some thing you can do intensely between first, second, and third grade, because they take those numbers, and when they see kids are popping out, drop out of third grade, they plugged it into a formula, and that's how they determine how many new prisons and jail cells they have to build.
Currently, our focus in pre-K first, second, and third is reading, is getting students to reading grade level. In fourth grade, we start to transition into a lot about more math conversations. I hear you, and I think that when we have the special call session, we can talk a little bit more about that. Thank you for bringing that up. I really appreciate it.
Were there any other?
You want to ask me that?
Questions and answers. So I think for today, the question that's on the table is for the board is, do you wish to continue with the $600,000 contract? And what I'm hearing, as a side to the vote you'll take, is the instruction to staff to schedule a meeting, an opportunity to tour the program, dig in deeper into the program, and to think about expanded partnership, which might include initial investment, which we would, of course, bring back to this board. Is that a fair assessment of the... And I've got a long list of questions, here. I would say, just on a personal note, I've been interested, and I think the chairman has been as well, and others as well, about the campaign for grade level reading. I think we're... and the potential partnering there that's really focused on reading proficiency at third grade. So it's much more limited. I would also say that just from a staff perspective, and Leilani and Abby, correct me if I'm wrong, but in terms of sort of the deep dive resources where people can go into the school, go into a kid's home, and navigate really all parts of that kid's life happen here, really in this partnership with CIS. It's unique in the trust that they've built in this community. It really is community and schools. I mean, it's from the superintendent on down, to PTAs, to program, to our property managers and others, CIS is embedded, and that's a joyful thing, much like we get with family elder care, working with our seniors, just like we get with some other partnerships. But the intensity of the services here is different than Boys and Girls Club, which does great programs, but does a different thing. These are really our most challenged families, and so I'm glad you all are talking about supporting and expanding. Because there's just a tremendous amount of need. Yes, ma'am.
This is a 5-year contract. What year? Because it said renewal. So what year are we in of the 5 years?
So this is the last year.
This is the last year. Sorry, yeah, this is the last year. That's why we're renewing it up to 5 years, but they would still come to do the reports for now. And what we have listed there was $600,000, which is no change or increase from last year.
Okay, so this is year 5.
Correct.
It is. But our belief is because it's a sole source contract, meaning there's no one else that does this kind of work, we're engaging in conversations with HUD about whether or not we have the ability to extend. We have to work with Nora and with HUD to get that extension, because I'd rather be less talking about that than talking about how do we improve and perfect really the only model that's research-based to do what we're trying to achieve. And so we're, you know, focusing on trying to, now's a really great time to have these conversations. We're far enough away from the pandemic where we saw tremendous drop-offs on lots and lots of things. And if we're, and we've got new leadership, you know, and you know, the old leadership was great as well. But there's a, but yeah, but you know, Suki and Cammy really were the, you know, were the kind of the keepers of the flame for a long time. And you know, the pandemic changed a lot of the way we deliver, you all delivered services, how you interacted with our kids, how you worked with our property staff and others and schools. I mean, schools had an incredible, you know, crisis of confidence. I mean, and you all were really kind of navigating to make sure that at the end of the day, our kids came out okay. And compared to others, overwhelmingly, our kids came out better
than
most kids going through.
Thank you for reminding the board of that. We did that. That is where we hired a third-party evaluator, and that's what they came and presented to you all, that HACA students did better, were less behind than anyone else in AISD.
And I mean, I said this directly to the superintendent. I mean, prior to, and we've had great relationships with different superintendents, but I mean, AISD, frankly, has been, up until now, you know, and it's emerging, but it's been a mess. I mean, it's really been a tough situation. And everyone who's got kids in AISD, I think, would say the same thing. So it's stabilizing, it's getting a lot better, but our kids have fared well, but not well enough, Dr. Duncan Hall, because I think, you know, we would see more going to college, we'd see more getting support. So there's a lot of refocusing and a lot of attention that needs to be that we need to address. And we've got new and fresh Abby ready to go and jump into all those things. But our request today would be approval of this motion, and then we have those discussions with the next, you know, 90, you know, really the next couple of months. So we would ask board approval of resolution number 02841. Commissioner Apostola moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, you were right, Mike, in terms of AISD, and I don't want to put them down, but they did, I guess 2001, when Veronica's no longer here, but I'd beat up on her for like 3 months in a row. And she showed me an article where AISD had gone through three different dropout czars. And that's when I said we need to create our own dropout prevention program. So sometimes problems create opportunities, and they did create opportunities for us. So from that, we went on and did the scholarship program. So we went on without them. And so to that, I want to applaud the HACA staff for what you've been able to do in partnering with CIS.
I would also mention, thanks for mentioning that, we had an opportunity, a bunch of the staff, to go to a luncheon recently, which was the first in a while where, you know, everyone was able to be together. The whole community was in the room, including the new superintendent, who I think really is setting the tone. I mean, I think it's a different day there, and I think we've got better partners. The last superintendents we had to work with on eviction prevention programs and other things through the family resource centers there. I mean, it was just, we were in a different place than we are today. Now we can really focus on the kids and kids' success. And so, and Sharon and her team have done a great job of pulling those resources together, which can redound to HACA. So expanding the partnership is really timely. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, Commissioner Apostolo moves, Duncan Hall seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Commissioner Bailey says aye. All opposed?
Yep.
And it passes. Thank you all. We'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.
The next item, commissioners, is actually under the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. We'll turn it over to Commissioner Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. The meeting has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. The next item is public communication. Is there anyone that has signed up for public communication? Okay. No public communication. Then the first item is the consent agenda, which is the minutes of March the 21st, 2024.
I so move.
Second. Thank you. All right. Mary motions, Carl seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The first action item, first and only action item, actually, is, where's, oh, hi, Suzanne. I was looking for you. And like, where's Suzanne? Okay. This is resolution 00246, and it is a couple of actions for the Urban East Multifamily Phase 2. Two actions needed on this: amend and restate the ground agreement, and also create the limited liability corporation for the development and the owner, and to enter into the development financing. So, Suzanne, take it away.
Commissioners, staff, guests, Suzanne Schwertner, Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. I'm excited to present to you the Phase 2 Urban East project. We closed Phase 1 back in November of 2020. This was one of those wonderful COVID projects we were building. We finally have finished it. We're so excited. We are leasing up. It is leasing up very well. We are at 15% occupied and 22% leased, so it's just going on and on really fast. And when we closed this loan, we closed the land for Phase 2. When we presented Phase 1, we let you know that we would come back before we entered into a Phase 2, because we wanted to be responsible and know whether it was still a good deal, because we knew it was going to be several years down the line. Because Phase 1 is doing so well, we have decided that we want to go ahead and continue with Phase 2. Phase 1 is 381 units, 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms. Phase 2 is going to be smaller, 137 units, 1 and 2 bedrooms. So we'll have a total of 518 units. Phase 2 is going to have a different debt provider. We used a local one, Texas Capital Bank, for Phase 1, and we've decided to go with a little bit larger debt provider with Cadence Bank. They're based out of Mississippi, but they do have offices all around Texas, and they have offices here in, or branches here in Austin. The debt's going to be around not to exceed $23,500,000. Our equity partners are still the same equity partners. It's Battery Global Advisors, who's based out of Boston, and then River City Capital Partners, who is also our developer partner, along with LDG. This one has 114 one-bedrooms and 23 two-bedrooms. We will have a few amenities with Phase 2, as far as like a community room, some of that, I can't remember, community room, but we have very extensive amenities in Phase 1 that Phase 2 will be welcome to use. We could have had this all as one development. That's how close they are. So it's just like walking out of a building and walking 100 feet to the next building. And I was going to let y'all know we have got, all right, where did I put it? We've got a breakdown of the units. We have about in Urban East Phase 1, which helped us to decide whether to go on with Phase 2. We have right now occupying a couple of families with 40% AMI incomes, about five with 50%, probably about two or three with 60%. A couple with 70%. So that's all in the affordable units that, you know, our standard requirement is 10% of the units at 60, 40 at 80. And we're already leasing or occupying with way lower than that. So it makes me feel really good. I know part of of those people work for AISD, for the city of Austin. And I think we have some Tesla, some Oracle, a bunch of restaurant employees. So it's exactly the type of demographics that we were expecting. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we were expecting, yes. And it's, you know, this is located just right down the street on Riverside between Montopolis and Vargas. Yeah, so it's I mean, it's very close to ACC Riverside, which I've asked them to make sure that they mark it. And I actually just found out the person that took over the head of ACC, I went to high school with, so I'm going to reach out to him and, you know, let him know we have all these properties and stuff.
Was he also Sylvia's roommate?
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting. I think that's, you know, a way to maybe get a partnership going as far as, you know, getting their teachers and students and stuff in. But this one, I think it's really going to lease well. And like I said, when we closed phase one, we didn't want to commit to phase two. And our partners were very happy with that. They said, you know, we feel very confident in it, but we do want to make sure that your board feels confident in it. So today what we're asking for is the final resolutions that would allow us, if you approve them, to close on the construction financing and to break ground shortly thereafter. So you wouldn't see it again until we do the grand opening.
Okay, thank you, Suzanne. Are there
any more questions for Suzanne?
I've got a question.
Chuck?
Yeah, Suzanne, how many affordable places do we have now in this new group of apartments?
How many affordable properties with this group of partners? Is that what you asked?
No, how many apartments were we going to lease at affordable prices?
How many affordable... In this one, 50% will be affordable. In phase one, we've already got 15% of those leased.
No, I misheard. I thought you said that to begin with it would be 10%.
Oh, no. 10% at what the restrictions are is we have to have 10% at 60% AMI and 40% at 80.
All right.
And we've already, we've already got 40% units and 50% units. So we're doing really well on the affordable side.
Can we ever, and this would be something for, I guess, the lawyers to talk about, where we enter into an agreement that's going to be 50%, could we put anything in those kind of agreements that 5 years later it has to be 75%?
So I can defer to Bill, but I think that would be more of a business decision that, because we're basing our financing off of the 50%, and our loans are outstanding for usually 30 years, 15 years. And so I think that would amend, that would be like probably getting new financing to switch that, because it would change underwriting.
What if you put it in the original contract? You don't have to... Everybody knows it's coming. 5 years from now, we're going to have another 25% deal. The people that are financing it, everybody already knows that. It's not something we got to come back in and redo.
You could definitely build that in at the onset, but probably what would happen is that the lender would underwrite the debt amount to the more restrictive size. And so it would limit some of the amount of the debt that would be available at the construction closing.
Bill, I'm sorry. I can't understand you. Are you you saying that if we tried to put that in there, then we'd lose our lenders and our partners?
Well, I don't know that you would lose them, but the economics of the deal, the way the sources and uses are structured, your lender would underwrite to rents and the debt amount to the more restrictive set aside from the get-go. So that would mean that you'd have to have more equity in the transaction to fund the construction, if that makes sense.
How bad do they want to use our
Well, truthfully, on Urban East Phase 1, we've already got 50% equity in, which is, like, unheard of. So that would be probably 75% equity we would require, because it would lower the debt that much.
Okay. I just wondered if there was any way we could squeeze a few.
It does not prevent us from encouraging management, you know, to look for that added percentage of affordable. And right now, I mean, you know, depending on what the economy's doing and how much affordable housing is in Austin, we may end up easily without having that put in the documents, we may end up with 75% at the affordable price.
And then another question, this was something that I know that Tyra was excited to hear. At some point in time, some of these the ones we build or develop, or the ones we just purchased, that have after-school programs for children unrelated to the just the ones that live there. Are we still doing that kind of thing?
We are definitely doing it at our tax credit properties that are more geared towards larger families and the lower income. We are, on this one particularly, we want to get the residents in to, you know what our resident mix is, whether we do have enough kids that would need those programs, and we will gear the programs towards whatever is needed by the residents. And it may be that we have more like single people that we need to get adult financial literacy in there, but we definitely will be surveying the residents and asking them what they need and looking at the demographics.
Okay, that makes sense. That's all I have.
Okay. Suzanne, didn't I hear you say that in phase one we have some at 40%?
Yes, already we do.
Mm-hmm. How many?
I think there's, I had it all printed out, and I guess I left it at my desk. Too many papers. I think there were, and just knowing that it's only 15% occupied, I think there were five at 40%.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions from the commissioners for Suzanne or Bill? Okay. If not, then do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 00246? Does a couple of things, allows us to amend and restate the ground agreement, lease agreement, and the ground lease, excuse me, and the development financing. Carl makes a motion. Tyra seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you all. And Suzanne and Ron, we look forward to next month where we have multiple business for AAHC. And I know you're working on it. There's no need for an executive session. Is that right, Mr. Gerber? Okay, do I hear a motion that Carl moves to adjourn, Mary seconds, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so AAHC adjourns at 1:47. Thank you all.
Thank you. Commissioners, return to the HACA agenda. With your permission, Mr. Chair, we'll go to number three, which is resolution number 2842 by the Board of Commissioners to take the following actions with regard to Urban East Apartments Phase 2, the very deal that you just talked about, to one, amend, restate the ground lease, two, Any other actions necessary or convenient to carry out the resolution? And I remind you what Suzanne said, this is the last time you will see this until the grand opening, which is exciting. So we'd ask for a motion to approve. Apostolo moves to approve.
Second.
Carrington seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Commissioner Bailey, you're on record as saying aye.
Yeah, he thought.
Yeah. Any objections? There are none, and that resolution passes.
Thank you, commissioners. We appreciate your support.
Thank you.
And Ron, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Could you introduce our guest from Belvoir real quick? As I think many of you know, we're in significant partnerships with Belvoir on a number of deals here in the city, and we've really enjoyed the partnership. We're lucky to have a guest visiting today and spending part of a week with us seeing those Belvoir and Haka assets here.
Yes. Good afternoon, commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, guests. I want to introduce to you Bianca Vernon. She is the head asset manager for Belvoir Corporation. I saw her look at her as my boss on the Belvoir side. She's absolutely fantastic. Been a great partner of ours. They're here this week observing and suggesting and walking assets that we own together. So we're planning on spending a lot of time together for the next few days. But thought she would enjoy seeing how we do things here and meet a few people. So welcome. Bianca here to meet everybody.
Yeah, Belvoir's our partner on many, many deals. All you need to do is look through the sheet and you'll see them as the major investor. They're based in California. You guys are based in California, right?
Yeah.
In San Francisco. Why don't you say a quick word, introduce yourself and what you're doing in town and maybe just...
Yeah, of course. Thank you for inviting me, Ron. Really appreciate it. So I am Bianca. I work for Belvoir. We're a real estate investment firm. We're based out of San Francisco, but we have an office in New York, and we have a very small presence here in Austin as well. We have about 15,000 units all over the U.S. It's all affordable housing. Our mission is to preserve and create affordable housing. And we partnered with the Housing Authority here in 2020, and in conjunction, we've been able to create, three, 4,000 units. And that's something that we're really proud of. We appreciate the partnership greatly. We feel very fortunate to be your partners, and we really love working here in Austin and building better communities with better outcomes. And our philosophy really is to be able to create better outcomes, and for these programs that you guys are working on, you need a safe and affordable place to live as a starting point. And that's really something that we're focused on. So thank you for having us. Thank you for saying yes to these projects. I was hoping that Ron would be able to present the next one today, but I'll be on Zoom on the next call for that one. Absolutely, yes. You can come to San Francisco if you're ever in New York. You'd like to see some of our properties there, Green Bay, everywhere. So,
that's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
In addition to being a real estate person, Bianca has two kids, one who's four or three and a half and one and a half. And so
yes.
You get to sneak away to Austin for at least a little bit of a break from them before you get to
the
back.
Yeah, I like being out on site and seeing the communities and seeing what we can be doing better, right? Sitting at a desk in California is different than walking and hearing the feedback from residents, from our property managers. So it is really important to me and my team. And personally, I get to get a break from the kids. So it's a mini vacation.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you all.
Last item, a presentation on ethics, responsibilities, and policies of the agency. And Lauren Aldred, our outside general counsel from Coconuts, is here today. This is the shorter version of the training that was provided to all staff back in March. And Lauren did a wonderful job with that presentation to all staff. It's important to refresh staff on the ethics policies, their responsibilities, and, of course, our zero tolerance policy against fraud, waste, and abuse, and sexual harassment, and a number of other things. So Lauren's going to give this board, which has gone through similar trainings in the past, a shortened version, because you all have sat through other trainings, and being respectful of the fact that we have one former chair of the, or executive director of the Texas Ethics Commission here, and Chuck's done a lot of work in this space as well. But still, it's important to just make sure that everybody's on the same playing field. So, Lauren, thanks.
Yeah.
So, Lauren, before you start, I want to ask a question. Is there a possibility you can coordinate with the city, city secretary's office and their boards and commission? Because we are required to go take a training, and if we're getting training here, it seemed to me it may be somewhat duplicative.
Sure. So, I can absolutely see if we can get you accredited for this or some sort of, I don't know.
Yeah,
we've started that conversation. So
okay.
So I think some aspects of that training are a little different. So we probably can't have it be a complete substitute, but let's work with them and with Lauren, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mike, commissioners. I also have a 3.5-year-old, though she's not in here, and a 1.5-year-old. So I had a hearing downtown in Alice, Texas yesterday, and it was a vacation from my children. You don't typically call Alice, Texas a vacation destination unless you get to spend a night alone in a hotel room from your children. Okay, so my name's Lauren Aldridge. I'm outside general counsel for the agency. I also help along, you know, any spectrum of what may come up for staff. I also help handle eviction proceedings, negotiating probationary agreements with residents at a set number of properties. I've taken phone calls from staff, you know, hey, I have a family member in need. You know, do you have a recommendation for a lawyer here, there? And I take my role as attorney very seriously, but I think more so the counselor role is something that's very important to me. I want to be an asset to the agency and its people because I believe in the mission. Lifelong native Austinite, and so lifelong native Austinite, yeah, that makes sense. So I've lived here my whole life. I was born at St. David's. The mission in this city is very important to me, and certainly protecting, you know, the more vulnerable members of our population is very important to me. And so that's why I'm here today. This is a condensed version of a training that I gave at a staff-wide meeting back in March. I'd like to give it to you guys so you understand what their mindset is and why our message of report, you know, if you see something, say something. So if someone shows up at your door, gives you a phone call, you know why they're doing that, and it's because I've told them 800 different ways that they need to do so. And so that's kind of what we're here to go over quickly, that training. If I can.
Jorge will be here.
Okay. So the title of this slide is the six principles of public service. These are, or six pillars, maybe a better way to describe it. It's principles that we should all aspire to in our daily and personal lives, but certainly in our professional lives, we aim to act trustworthiness and responsibility, to treat our coworkers, residents with respect, caring, and to be a member, a citizen of the city, and to treat people fairly, right? Sometimes, especially when you're in an executive position or a supervisory position, you do have to take adverse actions against people, guidance, disciplinary action, but we need to make sure that if we're doing something that, you know, may require counseling a staff member on a different course of action, that we're applying those standards fairly. And it's due to the behavior, not due to a characteristic or a protected class. Professionalism, we reminded everyone that they need to be dealing with everyone in a professional manner, all from residents all the way up to the board. You know, that goes for how we act, how we dress, and everything reflects back on HACCA. I reminded them that whenever there are allegations or whenever there are things that come up, even if they are misplaced, the first thing someone sees when they Google it is, you know, they don't see exonerated, right? They see the charges, the news stories. And so we want to remind everyone that when they're dealing with residents, vendors, clients, professionalism and a reflection of HACCA and the agency should always be front of mind. No financial dealings, no loans, working appropriate ethics, outside employment needs to be improved, things like that. The big, the big no-nos, no sexual relationships, no inappropriate touching. We talked a lot about operating in the gray area. I think everyone knows what the big bads are, right? And when it comes to sexual harassment, when it comes to, very clear black and white ethical violations, but that's not what we're going to be typically dealing with as much. It's going to be a gray area. It's going to, if my dad tells me you look nice today, that's going to be very different than if a random stranger on the street says it. And it's going to depend a lot upon my mood and how I take that. And so we talked a lot about intent, right? And how that isn't the guiding principle. It's how it's going to be received by the audience. And when it comes to resident relations, no sexual relationships, being courteous, don't loan them money, don't exchange favors for services, don't agree to perform work outside of work hours. It may seem like a nice thing to do to go over and fix someone's faucet, but if you, cut a water line and cause the whole apartment complex to leak, that's a liability issue for the agency, certainly, and creates problems for that resident, even if your intentions were good. We talked about professionalism and a work-from-home environment, as well as reminding everyone that emails do not have tone, and they're a neutral communication medium. And so something that may be very funny in your internal monologue when you're typing it on the email doesn't always come across the same way. There's not a sarcasm font, as far as I'm aware. And so it can be very difficult to pick up on tone, especially if you're communicating with an audience that is unknown to you. We have a no-tolerance policy for bullying. And bullying is repeated health-harming mistreatment of one or more persons by one or more perpetrators. It's abusive conduct that is threatening, humiliating, or intimidating. Verbal abuse, it can even, the passive-aggressive types of bullying, excluding people, not copying them on emails, things that make people feel like they can't get their work done and crosses workplace boundaries is bullying, and it's not tolerated here. We also reminded them there are work-from-home remote applications for these policies, and to keep in mind that just because you're communicating through a computer screen doesn't excuse you from behaving appropriately and ethically as well. We also are a no-harassment zone. I think bullying falls under the umbrella of harassment as well, but there are certain types of harassment that we want to remind everyone is not allowed at HACA, and the big one being sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is any unwelcome verbal or physical conduct based on race, color, religion, gender, national origin, age, disability, sexual orientation, and I have religion in there twice, so make sure you don't discriminate based on religion, super duper. There are two types of discrimination and harassment that are going to get us a phone call and potentially get the agency sued. The first one is quid pro quo harassment, this for that. The Baltimore Housing Authority recently got in trouble because they had a maintenance supervisor who was withholding maintenance requests and performance of those in exchange for sexual favors. That's the kind of thing that can take an agency down. I think it was the DC Housing Authority had a property manager who was threatening eviction over late rent payments was like, oh, I'll take it off your ledger, if you do this. Obviously, those are big, bad examples that everyone in this room knows are not okay. But that is the kind of thing that we have to have no tolerance for. And I reminded the staff of that as well. There's also the hostile work environment type of harassment, which is you typically see in discrimination charges and unemployment claims. And that's where an employee, a discharged employee, typically either they quit of their own volition or they claim that they were made to quit because the harassing behavior was so abusive that they had no choice. That can be, you know, demoting people, moving them around to less desirable positions, and, you know, a lot of, and in an effort to make that person quit rather than have to fire them, pay severance, et cetera, et cetera. A hostile work environment is harassment. There's no tolerance for it here, you know, certainly because it does open the agency up to liability, but because it's wrong to treat people that way. And we reminded staff to certainly be sure to come to a supervisor or to HR or to me if they believe that they were experiencing behavior like that. Because, you know, what typically happens is one little small thing will happen. Oh, maybe I'm misinterpreting it. Maybe it's not a big deal. And then the next small thing happens, and then it just starts to escalate. And then by that time, we're 12 months down the road, and it's become a huge problem when it should have been acted on and corrected at the beginning. And so we encouraged all of the employees to report. And as far as supervisors and executives go, you know, if you receive a complaint, whether or not you think it's valid, whether or not it's substantial or not, you know, it doesn't matter who the complainer is, whether they've got a, you know, a history or not, you are mandatory reporters. You have to let us know so that we can take action. Harassment can be male to female, you know, male, male, female, female, same sex, different sex. It can be supervised or subordinate. It can be on the same level. Anybody, you know, that the agency interacts with, vendors, clients, customers, can also be victims or recipients of sexual harassment or any type of harassment. We also reminded the staff that the complainant does not have to be the person who is being harassed. It can be something that you see. You know, at the airport, when they say, if you see something, say something, that's what we reminded our staff here. We have the same open door encouragement of reporting. Harassment can be verbal, comments, jokes, stories, personal questions, inappropriate touching. You know, I'm not someone who likes to be touched by people that I don't know. You know, so when someone I don't know gives me a hug, I know I'm not being harassed, but it does not make me feel comfortable if I don't know that person. And so you just want to make sure that, you know, if you're the kind of person who's a hugger, you know, that you understand that you're the person that might be receiving that hug may not feel the same way, and it may put them in an uncomfortable situation. E-harassment, email forwards, web surfing. I told the staff a story of a different client of mine who, there was a group text, it was a law firm, a group text of everyone from lawyers on down to like paralegals and legal assistants of all levels. And the lawyer, one of the lawyers, began sending very sexually inappropriate, lewd memes, jokes, photos to this group text. And everyone was reacting, you know, thumbs up, ha ha. And one of the paralegals in that group text essentially sued for hostile work environment and being harassed. And the law firm's response was like, well, look, she liked the photo. You know, she said, ha ha. We never heard anything about how this was inappropriate. She was responding positively. And again, to the emails don't have tone, neither do text messages. And this paralegal, she was like, look, I felt like if I didn't laugh, if I didn't participate, or if I said something, I'd get fired. And so it's important to remember that just because someone seems like they're game or that they're, you know, that they're okay with this kind of conduct, it doesn't matter. If it's harassment, it's harassment, and it needs to stop, and there's no place for it here. Virtual harassment, something in the remote era. You know, we're in someone's home. We're in Chuck's home right now, right? You want to make sure that if you're going to say something and if you're having a communication, especially if there's confidential or private information, there could be, you know, a child just off screen. And you don't want someone to be like, mommy, what does that mean, right? And have put your client or whoever you're talking to in an uncomfortable position to have to explain something. So just remember, when the rules don't go out the window when you're remote. So these are the seven or eight elements of HACCA's zero tolerance policy. Harassment of any kind will not be tolerated. We have procedures in the handbook for employees to make complaints about harassment, and we encourage all of them to report incidents of unwelcome sexual conduct and all types of harassment. I've repeatedly told them about the open door policy, and I think it was encouraging to me after the massive training that there was like a line, not out the door, but there were a fair amount of employees and staff who came up to me afterwards to discuss questions they had, maybe potential issues. They wanted to make sure they were doing the right thing and that the information they had was getting to the right people. We also reminded everyone that we treat complaints confidentially to the extent possible. Certainly there's a point where that confidentiality may have to break in terms of an investigation, where we have to go, you know, where it's going to become clear who the complainant is. But to the extent we can, we treat all complaints confidentially. Another big one, and the policy is on the next couple of slides, is the no retaliation policy. A lot of times people don't want to come forward because they're afraid of being retaliated against, of losing their job, being transferred away, being seen as a complainer. And we want to make sure that all employees understand that we treat all complaints seriously, and any complaint made in good faith will not be retaliated against. And we have discipline in place for employees who are violating these policies up to and including termination, sometimes immediately, depending on the severity of the situation. What I told the employees was, I was like, we want you to report, because you may not know the extent of what's going on. You may be the fifth person to report this person. And then that all goes into, you know, a file, and that is something that we can use in whatever investigation we're doing. But you may be the fifth person who's been receiving this type of abuse, but no one has said anything yet. And so, you know, we can't do anything about it unless we know. And so it's very important that, you know, you take it seriously. If you think that it's enough, that your gut is not sitting right with you, that's enough to come talk to me about it. Our policies also, reporting, certainly supervisors, managers, exec team, you have to immediately report these complaints if you receive knowledge, and we'll do an investigation and go where the evidence leads us on that. And these policies apply not just to employees, but vendors, consultants, applicants, clients, customers. And they also apply off-site, social events, holiday parties, et cetera. Okay. If you are a victim or a witness of inappropriate conduct, to the extent you feel comfortable and safe to do so, ask that it stop and document it. I told them, I said, look, if you're in this situation right now and you haven't asked for it to stop and you haven't documented it yet, that's okay. We can work with what you got, but it helps put us in a stronger position to defend you and to protect you if we've got a paper trail, you know, because in thinking like a lawyer, right, if we have to move forward on taking an adverse action against someone, their first thing is going to be like, why didn't they say anything? No one said anything. I've never heard about this before. And so the more documentation we have, the more we can put data in the file, the stronger our response can be. Report harassment to the Human Resources Department immediately. If you don't feel comfortable reporting it to HR, you can come to me. If you don't feel comfortable coming to me, you can go to Mike. You can go, you know, to whichever person in authority that you feel most comfortable reporting to, and we'll take it from there.
I would also make note that we have advised staff, if you ever felt uncomfortable and you wanted to talk to the board,
yes,
to feel free to do so, in which case you would all report immediately to Lauren,
right,
and share that.
Yes, and I think, you know, we've all, at least in my work as general counsel for, you know, companies, we've all seen people who just immediately email every single exec person, you know, with their complaint or with that. And that's okay. That we encourage them to report. There are appropriate ways to do that and to escalate things. We don't want every person just immediately emailing Mike whenever, you know, they have a complaint. But that is an avenue for them to do that, and we want them to feel comfortable bringing valid good faith complaints to us. Yep. We have to, by law, take immediate, by that I mean prompt and remedial action, and we take all complaints or concerns of harassment seriously, regardless of how minor it seems, who is involved, or employee, or the employee's history. And we have an anti-retaliation policy, and I think for the board, that last bullet point is what's important, is that all vice presidents, directors, managers, and supervisors are obligated to report all instances in which they have information that leads them to believe that any employee has been the target of harassment, whether or not they have received a formal complaint. So we encourage all employees to report, but those of us in supervisory management roles are required to do so. To prevent retaliation, we can all help do so by ensuring HR is involved, that conduct is fair in fact and in appearance, and we never want to discourage anyone from asserting their rights. And then the next two slides are resources that we gave the employees. I gave them a test on this slide right here. No, I'm just kidding. but this is the HUD policy. And it's where we take the HACCA policies from as well, and these are available as resources to everyone, all staff, employees, and the board as well. And then this was my contact information is down there at the bottom. I encourage anyone to reach out to me anytime. I answer the phone. I try to get back to anyone within 24 hours if I'm not at my desk when they call. So yeah. I went through that fast, but that's where that they got a much more expansive version of that with more examples and personal anecdotes. But that I wanted y'all to have the same training, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Did you have a question, Mike? No?
Questions?
Yeah.
Fine.
Thank you.
I was going to make note that so you said there was a line out the door. I would say that do you feel like I feel, and I think, you know, and Sylvia and I have worked really hard, and I wish Gloria was here too. I invite her to come down, but, you know, to really make sure that the door is open, that we talk about it, and that we keep it on people's minds. I talk about it during orientations, you know, where I just make very, very clear to people, you know, if you have any, you know, issues or challenges, you know, you should deal with them outside of here, because sexual harassment is never going to be tolerated here, and it's not going to. You're not going to be here for long. We're just about that blunt with people about it, you know, we really work hard on the, you know, having good systems in place. Mm-hmm. But compared to other agencies, do you feel like you've been with us now for a while? I mean, I feel like we've got good systems in place. But I'd welcome any just kind of reassurance to the board, or if there's things that we need to be thinking about that, you know.
No, I think that. You know, the agency nationwide is considered a best-in-class agency, an example of how to run an agency well, and not just, you know, check all the boxes, but actually internalize and live those principles and those policies. And I have certainly, you know, I've been in this position now for, I think, almost exactly a year, working with you all as the outside general counsel, and it's certainly something I have seen embodied by all of you in the board meetings, the policies, the commitment to the agency and its residents, and your employees especially. And when I talk to employees, you know, and I said there was a line out the door, they weren't all complaints, but it was more just, you know, hey, what should I do in this situation? What if I have something like this come up? How can I best counsel an employee here? They are actively seeking guidance and in an appropriate way, and, you know, outside of a few outlier situations, which are going to happen at an agency of this size, I think everybody seems to be bought into the mission and to abiding by the rules and the policies that we've set out. And so I think that I have no notes other than clearly what you're doing is working. So,
yeah. That's good to know. But but as we also know, I mean, all it takes is one person that you're not keeping track of on a regular basis, and you're, and it can require, an awful lot of, consume an awful lot of attention and time. So it's important to keep talking about it and to just make sure that we lay those expectations clear. And every vice president and every director, I think, feels, the need to talk about it. And we talk a lot about customer service here. We talk about respecting the client and making sure that we, give people training to sort of take situations down where things can get, hotter than we'd like them to be and out of, a little bit out of control. Because people, we're all good at getting under each other's skin and at different points, but you can't vent on a client. We can't take that out on a client, and we have to have good systems to prevent, to de-escalate, and that's really important. So we talk about all those things and mental health training and other things. This is a little bit different, but
yeah, it is. And I would say that a lot of times when someone calls, it's generally, how do I handle this resident issue? And it's not always, but typically it's a resident acting in a way that's aggressive or and how do I handle it? So it's usually, going up rather than coming down. And, in those situations, they're delicate and they take training and they take time and someone who can de-escalate effectively. And as far as when I've gotten involved, staff takes our recommendations. I usually get Mike and Sylvia involved if there's, a big problem. Staff takes our recommendations and implements them well. And I think that we've seen certainly a decrease in issues at the properties that I deal with frequently.
And I'm probably jinxing myself. I'm very grateful. I don't believe that we've had a sexual harassment charge leveled in quite some time.
Right. Yeah.
Years. So yep. I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. Nor have we had a harassment or bullying charge. In recent years.
There's only one that I'm thinking of, and I don't want to talk about it on the record, but yeah, it's just a discrimination charge, I think, based on FMLA or leave policies. But that's not so. It's harassment in that sense, but other than that, it's not founded, in my opinion. But I haven't had one come up in a while.
Well, great. Any other questions for Lauren? And she's a resource to y'all, obviously, and available to y'all. And again, I just remind you that you all are close to a lot of the staff. It's one of the, in many agencies, and when a Commissioner Carrington can attest, like a TDHCA, the board was really kept at arm's length from the staff. I mean, there was a real effort. I think we all feel like that's not who we are. And I'm glad you all have relationships with the staff. Part of that trust on your side is you have the position of trust you hold is that some of those staff might come to you with issues. If you ever hear anything like this, don't hesitate to call Lauren or call Sylvia or call me, call Gloria. We really, most important thing we want to do is we want to support the staff person and get them the assistance and get the situation in compliance and address it as quickly as we can.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks.
So it concludes item four. Great job, Warren. Thank you very much. So I've made a note about we'll try to see if we can move the, under the President's report, we'll try to see if we can move the, for those of you who have been reappointed, do a refresh on the items that the city wants you to know and do that. I think what they're going to want to talk to you about is financial reporting requirements. There's certain city ethics rules. And just the things that are attendant with being an appointee of the city. And even though I know there is been some spirited disagreement over the years about this board being different from other boards, and it is, it's not worth the fight. And so we're gonna see if we can make it as easy as we can, but knowing that there are some things that we still have to do. So I appreciate your attention to that, Nydia.
I reached out to to see if someone can come in at the next board meeting
mm-hmm.
and administer. No response. It was crickets. So
okay.
I'll forward that to Lauren so she
can
have it.
Yeah. Why don't you let me work on that with you? And I'll get back to Lauren. I'll get back with you about that.
Hey, Mike, I got a problem. probably 2 or 3 hours worth of comments, more than questions. You brought that up about, you know, that's my pet peeve. If we violate a city ethics rule, there's no sanction. There's nothing the city can do to us. And it's more important, I think, that we know what the state ethics violations are, because we're a state agency. Now, I don't, you know, to make your life easier, I'm not going to call the general counsel of the city or the city attorney and say y'all are full of crap, but they are on this issue. You know, you might think about that. You know, it's, and I had a long talk with the city ethics advisor years ago. And I said, what are you going to do to me if I don't do such and such? He said, well, we'll write you a ticket. I said, well, I'm not going to pay the ticket then, Mark. But I'll let it go. But kind of keep in mind, you know, we got some state obligations since we are a state agency. Not that I want to go to any poor ethics stuff, but
no, I appreciate that. You know, sure.
I had a boss that violated every single one of those lists that she had up there, to the point of the speech. He said a female senator could pass more bills if she shortened her skirt and wore high heels. I mean, it's you know, if you didn't like it, he'd fire you. Hopefully we're not.
No, I agree, Commissioner.
Let me
work with Lauren, and we'll figure out what the right training is and what the right level of compliance is. And you know my view generally, and I appreciate members of the board respecting my view of we have to work extensively with the city. And we have a very mutually supportive relationship with them,
I told you yesterday, just because of those reasons, I'm not going to squawk like I have in the past. But long as I've been on the board, Carl, I can't think of anybody had any ethics complaints filed against them. And I think before I got here, you wandered into a mess of them. But
one thing I would say,
there are state laws that you have to be concerned with.
One of the things I would say is I think Chuck does have a good point in terms of looking at, you know, state law, and I think you can go to the enabling statute to look at the appointment process, okay, terms and conditions for service. And then the other thing I would do is get a copy of the get with Mike and talk with Jackie Tabota to see about the ethics training that Housing Authority commissioners, there's a class that they recommend everybody take to get certified. And so you may want to look at that in terms of materials and distill that to put together something that is very unique for us. And that way you can show it with the city to show that, you know, we're covering, you know, everything that the city would cover with its open records, open meetings, ethics laws. Because, I mean, you know, when you look at what the handbook for the commissioners for NARA, when you look at what you put together, you can go to the Josephson Institute, all that stuff, it basically is the same 7 or 8 principles. It's just that how much you want to elaborate, how brief you want to be, but in the end, the principles are the principles, and you can, you know, get that together. And just, again, it would be a lot more convenient if you provided it to us as opposed to us having to go to the city. In fact, they've got a training next week. I just told them I couldn't go. I got a funeral. And they told me they will reschedule my training sometime in the future. But
okay. I'll work with Mike to see if we can put together a cross training that may work for both. And I think your point and Commissioner Bailey's point, reminded me that, you know, as a governmental agency, as a state agency, the Public Records Information Act, part of this is a big deal, because everything that you put in an email, the E in email stands for exhibit, right? That's what I was always told. So,
yeah, and I thought about that, but say the insurance department, TDI. Say they violate the Open Records Act, Open Meetings Act. City can't come over there and say, and maybe it's the subcommittee that works with the DA's office and for insurance fraud cases. City can't do anything to TDI. They just can't do it. Mm-hmm. They don't have authority. And that's my position here. Yeah, I know, you know, we sign affidavits and we take oaths and we do all that kind of stuff, but so does every other state agency in Austin. Another thing I thought about when Mike and I were talking, every once in a while we go head to head with the city over properties. They want to move and put one of their deals in our area. Well, that's clearly a conflict but we're not part of it. So anyway, bring them on. I'll come listen.
So, Lauren, I think the message is that we're not opposed to it. We just want to make sure that we're taking something that really applies to what we do. Because in the sense, you know, the state does govern us, but also in terms of the stuff that NARO put together, looking at not just state stuff, but also because of HUD. Mm-hmm. You know, HUD can come in and say, your board has a problem. And because it's federally funded, mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to pay attention. The city didn't give us money. And so we're not opposed to it. I just would prefer to make sure that it encompasses, it's appropriate. And I'm not saying what the city does is inappropriate, but I'm not sure it covers the stuff that but like this, we are unique in terms of, we're more of a hybrid agency as opposed to a city department.
Right. You need to
HUD in the city are apples and oranges, so that doesn't fly with me. I mean, HUD could take our money away from us.
Correct.
And could get us for violating all kinds of contracts and federal statutes relating to their responsibilities with us. City's not in that position. But look, you're not going to convince me otherwise. All I'm telling you is, I'm going along with what Mike suggests, but there's issues there, and there have been since I've been on the board. This is the first time I've talked about it. Anyway, that's my place, and I'm about ready to go take a nap.
Great. Let me mention a couple of other quick things to you, just by way of reporting out. On May 17th, we have Mayfest, as you've heard. May 31st is the Women's Conference, as you've heard. June 7th, we are tentatively shooting to do the grand opening of Chalmers West. That'll be the last celebration. That is a Friday, and we're looking at that day. We're still coordinating with elected officials to see if they can come, but that'll be our last big celebration. We're looking to do really kind of a street fair and some other things to try to celebrate that day. So that's the tentative date. If you have issues on that date, please let me know, and we'll try to work through them. And there's some flexibility on moving things around a little bit, not a lot.
When would it start? Do you have time?
I think we were trying to think about doing it. You know, for elected officials, I think they'd like to do it generally more in the morning if we're going to get press. Do something 10:30 to noon.
It's June.
Yeah,
Texas.
It is.
I'll tell you, I have every other week. I have a client call from 10 to 11, and that one falls on the 7th.
Okay, so it sounds like we got to do some shifting around some things.
Not saying that, just saying. Carl and I are saying.
Well, I think we need our chair, and certainly, and we certainly want all of you if we can get all of you. So let me come back, and we'll revisit dates. I also want to let you know that National NARO is holding their summer conference in Chicago, July 11th through the 12th. That's significant because it's also coinciding with the grand opening of the National Public Housing Museum there at the site of, what's the Taylor Homes? What's the name of the historic public housing building in Chicago that the Chicago Housing Authority donated? Helen Taylor Homes or Robert Taylor Homes, I think it was. So, but it's happening during that same time. So if you're interested in going to Chicago, it's a 2-hour Southwest flight up the way. And Nadia would be glad to help you with reservations, but I'd love to have you all attend. Last thing I will tell you, just on the staff level, I think staff is generally doing really well. But I would say that we have unveiled to them, or I unveiled to them, our return to work approach, which I think I've shared with all of you. The idea on June 1st, all executive team members will be in 3 days a week into the office. By September 1st, all directors, supervisors, anyone who's supervising somebody, managers, team leads, whatever you're called, you're in three days a week. And by January 1st, 2025, everybody's in 3 days a week. There's some wrinkles to that what those days look like, and we're trying to make sure we have adequate coverage on Monday through Friday, but the 3 day a week is the general principle. We have heard from some staff that are very disappointed by that. They believe they can work fully from home and have been successful in working from home, and they have been successful working from home. We haven't missed a beat by working from home, but it's been 4 years since the start of the pandemic. There's virtually no other place that is exclusively working from home. Even Indeed and Google, the most high-tech platforms in the world, are having their staff come in. Our dear friend Andrea, who headed up TMI, she went to work for Visa, and she's in 3 days a week. So, we're trying to meet the needs of staff, but also at the same time recognize that we're a public trust agency and need to be client-facing. And some people have been here 5 days a week all the time throughout the entire thing, like our property staff and Nora and Andrew and me and Sylvia, me and some other folks. So, Nydia, Keith, so some folks have been. So we think that's the right spot. More people they're going to have to get used to the idea of coming in, but it is causing some gas among staff and some staff, and I wanted to just make you all aware of it, and we're just kind of working through that. One of the strategies we're using to try to, every division's holding a monthly meeting in person. Every division is going to try to, Lisa does a great job, just trying to make it fun. She does a potluck, or she's taking her staff to go bowling, or does something that's connective and pulls people together. We want folks to do those things even if people are angry and frustrated about having to come back, our hope is that they say, but it's still a really good place to work, and I don't want to give that up. Most of the people we're talking about have made significant investments of their career here. People have been here a long time, and I think that most folks will make the transition, but there'll be some concerns expressed about it, and I want to make sure you all have the heads up that that's been rolled out, and I'm sure Lauren will hear some concerns, and others will hear some concerns, and we'll try to do it compassionately and as painlessly as we can. But there is going to be some hurt. There's going to be some pain. Anything you want to add, Madam COO?
Well, speaking from someone who commutes from Round Rock, I can understand and relate to some of that angst, just because the commute is a solid hour each way, and it seems like traffic is just getting worse and worse by the day. So I get it. But the other thing that we're also working on concurrently is doing a refresh of the headquarters building. It's long overdue.
I mean, it could be worse. It could work at a law firm, keeping track of their time in 6-minute intervals. Yeah. Commissioners, that's all the information we have. Sylvia, is there anything else you wanted to add to the mix? Great. Well, thank you. Oh, I will add one last thing, since Jorge's in the room. You know, TMI has done just a tremendous job this past year in, you know, putting systems together. We're moving to the Microsoft platform. That's happening with, you know, there's another one of those other things. There's going to be pain, but it's been minimized as much as we can have it be. And, you know, between Jorge and Keith, who's amazing, and other members of our team, you know, we're not missing a beat. And I just wanted to hats off to you guys. You know, it's been a year since the freeze and floods and, you know, other stuff. And, you know, it's been a full year. But I want you guys to know what a strong job and team we've got in TMI. So thank you.
Thank you.
And we would ask for an adjournment.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
There is.
Duncan Hall and Apostolo.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are adjourned at 2:34 on Thursday, April 18th, 2024.
Thank you all. Oh, yeah, you should. We're so, I'm so excited. Congratulations.